This is Radio National Drive. 138,000 jobs were lost last month, with the unemployment rates rising slightly to 4.6 in September. A further 129,000 people stopped looking for work. The Federal Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, concedes the unemployment figures out today do not reflect the full story in lockdown states.
The participation rate was down, and there are still many Australians who are doing it tough and who indeed have been stood down on 0 hours.
That's Josh Frydenberg, the Treasurer, speaking earlier. Dr. Angela Jackson is the lead economist at Equity Economics, and she was also the Deputy Chief of Staff to former Federal Finance Minister Lindsay Tanner. I spoke to her earlier and started by asking whether she was surprised unemployment wasn't higher.
Oh, look, not really, because I think what we have seen, you know, over the previous few months is that people are leaving the labour market. They're not participating. So what we're seeing is there's less jobs, but the actual unemployment rate, which is a measure of, you know, the percentage of people who are actively looking for work or in work, has actually dropped over this period. So we've had this disconnect, if you like, between the reality that more people are out of work, and obviously we also have a lot of people in Australia relying on disaster relief payments at the moment, and the unemployment rate, which isn't really reflecting what's happening in the economy.
Yeah, more than 100,000 people out of work and another 129,000 stopped looking. Is this likely to be the worst month of figures, or do you anticipate they're going to get worse?
It's going to be interesting to see. So we did see, this is the first month we've really seen the impact in Victoria. So the majority of these job losses were in Victoria for sort of a timing issue. It missed the beginning of this latest lockdown in Victoria last month. I think we might see a deterioration again next month before things improve, with the opening up obviously in Sydney at the moment and across New South Wales, and fingers crossed in Victoria in a couple of weeks. This is probably the low point in terms of employment. But in terms of unemployment, I think we're actually going to see that going up in the months ahead, because we'll see people coming back looking for work again. Those that haven't been looking for work, they then get counted in the numbers, and so that percentage figure will go up.
And women have accounted for 60% of job losses since June. Why are women so highly represented?
Look, for a number of reasons. Women are more likely to be in casual work, so in secure work, so more likely to be let go when times get tough. Women are also overrepresented in a lot of the industries that have been really heavily affected. So we think retail, we think hospitality, we think hairdressing, some of those service industries that have been impacted by the lockdowns are overrepresented by women in those industries. So women will get back into work, hopefully, once things open up. But particularly young women have really felt the brunt. So out of those figures, you know, since June, 280,000, 55% of those are young workers. Now, they only make up 15% of the overall labour market, but they've been hit really hard. And of those young workers, 70% are female. So young women have really been hit hard through this pandemic. And look, hopefully they bounce back, they get back into work, but they'll probably feel the effects of this loss of work and loss of employment for a long time into the future. We worry about young people because the scarring effects are likely to be longer. If they get out of work, they might find it harder to get back into work. They might not get back into such a good job and such a well-matched job. So we really have to be careful, I think, and look at the policies that we have over the next 6 to 12 months in particular, that those young people are getting back into jobs, they're getting back into good jobs, secure jobs, so that these impacts don't impact a whole generation for sort of the next 10 or 15 years.
Angela, the Reserve Bank governor, the deputy governor, Guy Debelle, has today delivered a speech labelling climate change a first order risk for the financial system, and Australia will suffer while political debate continues. It was a really, really strong speech and intervention from him. What's he saying?
I think he's saying get on with it. I think it's probably what the BCA is saying, what, you know, leaders across the board, what a lot of us have been saying for a long time, that, you know, these risks are real. And obviously for Australia, climate change itself is a huge risk in terms of our own climate and what that's going to mean in terms of the risks that businesses have to manage. But the longer that we lead this, the longer that we go on this path to adaptation, to net zero, the bigger the risks become. And so the harder it becomes, and the more the economic impact is going to be. So I think what he's really saying is, look, Glasgow's it. Let's sign up. Let's get on board. Let's start transitioning to this low carbon economy. There are going to be huge benefits as well. We shouldn't forget that. At the moment, Australia is, you know, missing out on international investment into green climate technologies. We want to get on board this train, if you like. We want to get on board it now.
Yeah, and the Deputy Governor points to New South Wales as examples of communities which previously exported fossil fuels, switching to green energy and the jobs security that that can potentially create. What threat does climate change pose to the financial sector?
Look, I think it is big because there's two sort of risks, as I went through before. The first is obviously that, you know, we have more adverse events. We have more floods. We have more cyclones. We have more poor weather events. And in Australia, that more of our country, you know, is in drought. We can't grow food. Those are real risks that businesses have to manage. The other side, of course, is that the change comes too fast, so that we have to adapt and we have to lower emissions too quickly. And they're real financial risks for businesses and for communities.
And so we have his intervention. We've got Andrew Twiggy Forrest, the head of Fortescue, giving a pretty significant speech at the National Press Club today. Obviously, all of that at the same time as the Cabinet considering the case for net zero emissions by 2050. Is all of that going to be meaningful at trying to deliver a deal?
Look, let's hope so. You know, we've obviously seen in Australia, and as you said, I was Deputy Chief of Staff when it didn't get through the Senate the first time around. We've seen Australia and our political leaders fail in this regard on numerous occasions. It is really important, I think. I mean, I think the weight of both, you know, internally within Australia and also internationally for action has never been greater. I hope that this is the time that, you know, Australia can have a bipartisan approach to this issue, really get on board. That creates a certainty that the economy needs. It creates the environment in which we can make the best of this transition for all those communities, including those that are going to be impacted, because I think the lack of certainty for them is also very, very real and a real threat in terms of their survival in the long term as well.
Dr. Angela Jackson is the lead economist at Equity Economics. She was also the Deputy Chief of Staff to the former Federal Finance Minister Lindsay Tanner. This is RN Drive.